when we talk about establishing the context for performance, we're talking about viewing the organization within its marketplace, whether or not it's a for-profit entity, and therefore showing the relationships between external customers, suppliers, regulators, and competitors, whatever is relevant to that organization, as well as the internal network of customers and suppliers formed by the organization's functions or departments, which enables the organization to provide the products and services that it's in place to do.
This is the ERP Organizational Change Journal podcast, brought to you by Nessel and Associates, a Newport Beach, California-based ERP organizational change management firm serving the private equity industry. The ERP OCJ seeks to share expertise, insight, experience, and research, and to create effective conversation to help guide ERP organizational change to real, measurable, and verified success. And now, here's your ERP expert and host, the founder of Nessel & Associates, Dr. Jack Nessel.
Hey, Jack here. In this episode, our guest is going to share pointers and insights into how effective and efficient learning and development advocates for performance improvement, which advocates for successful ERP organizational change. Knowledge sharing and organizational learning are two organizational culture influences that contribute to ERP organizational change success. And organizations that can recognize, advocate for, and adequately execute knowledge sharing and organizational learning tactics increase the likelihood of performance and success. So today we will explore this topic further. All of us here at the ERP OCJ hope you find this podcast useful as we share lessons learned, discover best practices, and explore the human element components of ERP organizational change. In this episode, we will discuss ERP organizational learning and performance improvement with Carol Panza. Carol is owner of CMP Associates, and she is a management consultant. CMP Associates is a management consulting firm specializing in the analysis and custom design of improvement strategies for businesses. Carol has an extensive track record of successfully assisting client companies from a broad range of industries and functions. She has clients in financial services, pharmaceuticals, retail, manufacturing, telecommunications, technology, marine transportation, and more. So without further ado, joining us from Morristown, New Jersey, Carol, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. I'm happy to be here.
I'm looking forward to this, Carol. I know you have a lot of great insight here and experience. I'm looking forward to this conversation for sure. But before we get started, Carol, can you tell us more? Can you further introduce yourself to our listeners?
Sure. And thanks for the opportunity. You've mentioned that my clients I've been fortunate to work with come from a broad range of industries and also cultures in some cases. But I've been around in the field of performance improvement for more than 40 years, which of course means that I began when I was five.
Right.
I worked for two small consulting companies before starting CMP Associates. And as you said, I've worked with a large, small, and over a broad range. But in all of that, I'm known for my analysis skills. By clients, certainly, and also by other professionals in the field. I'm a longtime member of the International Society for Performance Improvement, in which I've been very active, including serving on the board of directors and being part of the founding of ISPI Europe, Middle East, Africa, which just delivered its 21st conference, 5 days over six. And we had folks from 10 or 11 countries.
Wow.
It's a very interesting conference with a very unique format that we evolved into, and it's been a stable format that gets incredibly great reviews since 2010 when it was solidified. But the centerpiece of it is what we call the Open Assist, where we have a real client with us with real improvement opportunities. And our teams receive their requests for proposals and then spend time during the conference, of course, attending sessions. But all of the sessions and the people that are there become kind of crowdsourcing resources. And we get such great feedback from the clients because of the value they have gained, because they get to keep all the proposals, and our teams are always happy to talk to them further afterwards about, you know, how to go about the different ideas and suggestions that have been made. But anyway, we just finished that, and it always leaves me sort of exhausted, but also very happy that we have been able to do this. And for the last couple of years, we have a scholarship program that has allowed us to invite students who are usually MBA or PhD candidates to join the conference. And that has been really great. They've come to learn that we're a learning, sharing bunch, and we're happy to have them.
That sounds like a wonderful conference, Carol, and great success and growth. And what a wonderful way, talk about collective sharing and collective learning. That sounds great. Is that something that you'll be able to share out with us so that we can include it in the show notes, a link?
Yeah, we do have a website. And in fact, all of the pieces for this year's conference are certainly there. We've also, when we took the conference virtual because of the pandemic, we decided that we would not have any concurrent sessions. Every session that was delivered would be the only thing that was going on in its time slot.
Oh.
Because we span such a broad range of time zones, we have recorded all sessions. So people over there can access the recording.
Sure.
You know, even as we're going along, if you're in Shanghai, which one of our participants was in, you're 12 hours different. So
yeah, right.
So they could always listen to the recording in a time frame when they weren't sleeping. If they don't want to, or it's impossible for them to join live, the recordings are the next best thing. Our folks are very engaged and don't just sit there and listen. They participate frequently. It's putting things in the chat so that you don't disrupt the presenter, as we keep the sessions to 45 minutes because it's just too long a time period for people to sit there just staring at their computer, even if they are putting things in chat.
Yeah.
At some point, we may be able to separate out some of the valuable pieces. Like, we always have a senior executive panel, that CEO level, senior VP. Of course, titles change from all over the world. First year we did it, we had senior executives from all the EMEA components. So we had Europe, Middle East, and Africa all represented. This time we had Europe and Africa. We didn't have any from the Middle East I can think of.
Wow. It sounds like a wonderful opportunity and a wonderful conference. How exciting. Well, what we do know is that organizational learning is positively associated with organizational improvement, development, and therefore success, and that knowledge-related influences facilitate organizational performance and improvement, and thus plays a significant role towards improving the effectiveness of ERP organizational change. And this requires that the organization has a general culture of sharing and learning. So the acceptance, understanding, and mindset amongst the stakeholders regarding the value of knowledge sharing and organizational learning during a large-scale ERP implementation is a critical success factor. In fact, organizational learning takes deliberate intent to embed learning as an organizational culture asset, I would say. So that is the topic in the area that I'd like to focus on with Carol. The first question for you is, how would you actually define effective and efficient organizational learning? And notice how I said effective and efficient, not just organizational learning. But what does effective and efficient organizational learning look like to you?
Yeah, I do really appreciate that question and the emphasis on effective and efficient, because that's not always the case.
Yeah, right.
For me, organization learning that is efficient and effective, including aligned to support the organization's goals and objectives, begins with a results-focused organization analysis, beginning at the strategic level of the organization's fit into its marketplace, therefore its customers, suppliers, and so on. Even if it's not a for-profit organization, they still have customers and suppliers. Mm-hmm. and enabled by the organization's internal network of customers and suppliers, i.e. functions and departments, through work processes down to individual position or job performance requirements that are the framework for identifying essential skill knowledge and performance support requirements for all jobs, including the approach best suited to skill knowledge acquisition and, importantly, application of skills and knowledge to the job. Broadly speaking, those approaches for me include classroom or lab kind of training, you know, people outside of the work environment, and task-based on-the-job or simulation approaches, and finally job aids, you know, kind of last but not least.
Sure.
We believe in developing learning systems that include all of these approaches, depending upon the specific skill knowledge and performance support requirements of any job or job family, rather than 100% knowledge-focused training programs that are limited to classroom or even computer-based training approaches. Further, the upfront analysis, even with great organizations, not only ensures the alignment of learning and development to the organization's goals and objectives, but they also tend to build acceptance or ownership by the workforce. It also invariably identifies improvement or enhancement opportunities for making the organization even better. So my clients always ask for training or performance support or something, knowing that they're going to get a whole organization analysis up front.
Yeah. Carol, thank you for that. And I'd actually like to dig a little deeper, and I'd like to discuss your fundamental approach towards performance improvement. And I know that your approach, and as you describe on your website, there's three quite fundamental concepts that differentiate your approach to performance improvement. And you also had mentioned that these are, you know, some fundamental concepts that are often missing from TQM or total quality management or BPR, you know, business process reengineering processes. And you talk about this idea of context, process, and performers. Can you elaborate further on this idea of context and what that means in terms of your fundamental concepts in the way that you approach performance improvement?
Absolutely. Yes, and context is so important. As I long-windedly answered the last question, you need to establish the context for performance at the outset as the first step. Oftentimes, this isn't the case with folks that are ingrained in some of the different approaches to analysis for performance improvement. They often tend to start at the process level. But when we talk about establishing the context for performance, we're talking about viewing the organization within its marketplace, and again, whether or not it's a for-profit entity, and therefore showing the relationships between external customers, suppliers, regulators, and competitors, whatever is relevant to that organization, as well as the internal network of customers and suppliers formed by the organization's functions or departments, which enables the organization, of course, to provide the products and services that it's in place to do. The relationships are defined by the products and services that the functions get from and provide to each other, internal customer supplier network, in order for the organization to operate and succeed within the external marketplace. So if you look at the deliverable that I submit to clients in that aspect, that first step of what we do, and by the way, whether it's a company that's looking for a whole organization analysis, or they want to pursue a particular result area for the organization, or it's a function that calls us in for looking at how to optimize their performance in a particular area, or even a single position that they believe to be pivotal to some achievement that they're trying to get in place, we always start with the organization in the context of the customers and suppliers for the whole organization. And I think that is so important because if you start, for example, at the process level, you have the process as the centerpiece and people are reaching back to link to the customers and suppliers that they can conceive of. And oftentimes, even if they get all of them, they fail to look at the interface between the functional parts, which can have a very big impact on the process that they're talking about or that they're focusing on. So the map that we deliver is a very important tool. And oftentimes people retain those documents and use them very effectively to have, for the first time, a really effective and understandable, but most importantly, common picture of how the organization works, which is very different from just the organization chart that shows who reports to whom, and you can figure out what the general power bases are, who has the most employees or sub-processes that are reporting to them. Well, we prefer to look at how the organization works.
Yeah, and I think, isn't it, Carol, if, to your point, if an organization starts out with the process piece, it can become just an internal exercise, right? Where it's a little more self-centered, where you're not focused on the big picture. And right. In terms of organizational performance, really at the end of the day, it has everything to do with your inputs and your outputs, right? So that means, you know, there's other stakeholders, your partners and your suppliers. And then, of course, on the other end of that, it's your customers. And what do your customers value? What do they want? What's the quality and the service that they expect? That has everything to do with organizational performance. So by starting out with a primary, fundamental approach and really understanding that context, I think it helps you really understand, like you said, the interfaces between those other external stakeholder groups and really dial in on opportunities for improvement versus being a little more self-focused, you know, internally.
That's absolutely spot on the truth. In fact, I always get concerned about when you start at the process level, what you tend to do, as you kind of alluded, is maximize for your process as opposed to optimizing for the organization.
Yeah, well said. Yeah. So can you tell us a little bit more about the specify the process? So we start out with the context as one of your primary fundamental concepts, and then you start talking more and drilling into the actual process. Can you explain that a little bit more to us?
Yeah. Once we have the context, then we move to the process as the critical link between organization level results and job or position performance requirements. We want to start with the really context strategic view, but we have to get to the level of people because generally speaking, the organization and what we're suggesting as solutions or when we're identifying opportunity areas, it's almost always going to be something that people will have to deal with as a change or that they'll have to do differently in order to support the organization. But one of the things that is different, because a lot of organizations and a lot of approaches include process analysis, but the process analysis that we do is a bit different because we specify process as a sequence of accomplishments, which is to say outputs or results versus behaviors, or my favorite word, just stuff. That kind of specification of process is so important because if you don't base it on accomplishments, if you use activities, behaviors, or you know some combination of all of that stuff, even the most up-to-date iteration and articulation of a process is almost invariably going to change, because if you change one step from being a people-driven step to being automated, for example, or if you change a particular tool to something more sophisticated or easier to use or bigger or who knows, anytime you do something like that, you have to redo the process because you've changed it. Is the people are doing something differently, their behaviors are different. And on the other hand, it's accomplishment-based. The process stays useful and correct for a relatively long period of time, because the things that are changing are not the results, they're the behaviors and the activities that support and drive to the results. And once you have the accomplishment specified process, you also have a framework for continuous improvement, as opposed to cementing the most current what is that becomes the Stone Age, in a few months in some cases. In fact, we were working within one of the technology organizations, and of course, they go through those kinds of things, bringing consultants and, paper the walls with all these processes.
Yeah.
But people were really dissatisfied with that because it didn't take them anywhere. And the CIO brought me in to support the help desk function for that organization, which was a master performer, and they wanted to model that organization in order to build another one in an affiliated organization. But I suggested that the most appropriate thing to do is do the analysis on the organization that you want to model as if it were a client, which it was. And in the process of putting together these two pieces that we've just been talking about, the relationship map, the context piece, and the process pieces, the folks that we were working with within the help desk and the larger IT organization, they got so enthusiastic about these tools because they were actually helping them to improve, and they used the documents, the cross-functional process flows and the relationship maps. And one of them said to me, "Gee, you are really insightful, aren't you?" I said, "No, I'm just going to use my tools."
If I may, I want to ask you about that. So in terms of process, it's all about, organizational improvement, performance improvement, and a lot of people talk about BPR, business process reengineering, or VSM, value stream mapping. So maybe tactically, if you can help our listeners understand what it looks like in terms of focusing on a sequence of accomplishments versus behaviors, because like you said, often, you go into a war room or a conference room and there's a whole bunch of paper with lots of diagrams on it. When you look at processes and you start with this, kind of walking through step by step, what functionally happens maybe within your organization or within a department. And once you go through that flow a few times or that value stream mapping, there's often, you identify gaps, right? Or as I often say, things come out in the wash in terms of opportunities, because you get the right people, the right stakeholders together. You go through this value stream mapping exercise. And sometimes once you do that and you put it to a flow and you make it a little easier to see, what happens a lot of times is people are like, "Oh, wow, yeah, that is broken," right? And then along the way, in during value stream mapping, you talk about this idea as a metrics and goals, for each step. So why is it that this step isn't working? What can we accomplish here? What do we need to accomplish here? But can you just walk through, just drill down one more level, maybe more tactically for our listeners? And when you talk about sequence of accomplishments, what does that look like exactly? How do you do that throughout this process of specifying the process?
Right. Because you want to get to a lower level that people can relate to immediately. The big difference is, for example, you might have a step on a typical process flow that says reports evaluated or reports reviewed. And I always sit there and say, okay, so what does that mean? It's disembodied from what you're really trying to accomplish. You're telling me what you're going to do, not what you need to get done. And it's the what you need to get done that lasts for a long time. What you do can change all the time. And in fact, oftentimes, it doesn't really matter. Does it really matter that you put it on blue paper versus green paper? And in some contexts, it might, but who knows, or if you do it standing on one foot. But if you, instead of saying reports reviewed, you say something more meaningful about why you're reviewing those reports, then I'm with you. And, you know, for example, you're reviewing the report to identify discrepancies or to prioritize your sequence of visiting customers. I don't know. But you want to look to what the activity that you can't define or that is subject to change and ask why. And it's that why you're doing it, that little result that is going to push the process forward.
And I think essentially, Carol, what you're doing there is evaluating and acknowledging the value of that particular step, right? You're really asking questions. Okay, how does this really impact or accomplish our mission?
Right.
Aren't you really, you're taking that process, maybe that the value stream mapping or that process to the next level, because instead of, like you said, just kind of walking through the functional steps or the behaviors, what you end up doing really is questioning and reflecting on what is the real value of this particular step? And is it getting us to where we want to be? Is that a fair point?
That's a good statement. And in fact, you were talking about installing measurements. If you're couching your process in terms of a sequence of accomplishments, you've already got perfect points at which you can measure. And you're obviously not going to measure every single one. But by definition, you're looking at something that is tangible and observable.
Yeah, absolutely. And Carol, I really like your third fundamental concept, and that is the idea of creating a supportive environment for performers. Mm-hmm. So we talked about this idea of process, and then before that, we talked about this idea of context. And then you also talk about one of the three primary fundamental concepts is this idea of performers. Can you explain that?
Yep. Yeah, I always, and I usually have a funny little picture of the performer, that inside the performance system, but performers or employees are the organization. After all, if you take away all the employees, what do you have? A bunch of machines, you know, and empty warehouses. Yeah. But creating a supportive environment for performers, to me, is a, if not the critical requirement for supervisors, managers, anybody that has people reporting to them. And what I think is important is making clear to everyone in the organization that you recognize that everyone lives within a performance environment in the simplistic way that we describe it, that I'll give you in a minute. But everyone from the CEO to the janitor lives within a performance system, which consists of expectations or the results that the position incumbent is expected to produce, the resources, including the work tools, the things that you use every day to get the job done, or raw materials and things like that, as well as required skills and knowledge. In addition to expectations and resources, you have consequences, which is really incentives or sanctions. What happens when a result is produced from an expectation? Do they get pat on the back, acknowledged? Is there any feedback at all? Is there any way for the performer to know if they have succeeded or not? There's also feedback, which is a consequence, in my opinion, as well. But, you know, feedback to tell the performer how close or far away they were. In the case of feedback and consequences, mostly consequences, you can have formally or engineered by the organization consequences. You can also have consequences that come from your fellow workers and come from the environment. So perhaps in a union situation, you have somebody who's new and they got the expectations, these are the things I'm supposed to do, and just really putting in all the effort to do it, not only on time, but, you know, of the highest quality and all the rest of it. And the other folks are saying, oh, you know what? You didn't get the memo. You're not supposed to do it that well. But there are all kinds of things that we don't even think about until you start looking with those glasses on that are in the environment that are discouraging as opposed to supporting. I have a little tool that I share with people. I mean, this is a really simple model, but the important part about it is to get you to think when you're looking at performers and make sure that the performance system that you provide is supportive of their ability to be successful in carrying out their job expectations.
Yeah.
Because, of course, expectations drive the performance system, which is another vote for looking at the expectations that people have and making sure that they are correctly and consistently tracked back or linked back to the organization's results. You know, we strive to have all positions have a line of sight through the process that they belong to the organization and its results.
Yeah.
It's not only engaging, it's very rewarding for people, and they really get that we're all in this together mentality, and people begin to be able to appreciate and understand the value of the others. Nobody yeah. gets up in the morning and says, you know what, I think I'm going to do a terrible job today.
Exactly. And I really appreciated that idea and that fundamental concept of focusing on the performers, you know, because I do agree that often that's a piece that's overlooked. Mm-hmm. And, you know, sometimes it can be a little bit abstract, right? I think that stakeholder dynamics and diversity, in diversity in terms of motivation, knowledge, experience, and of course, organizational factors, as you'd mentioned, you know, the value of feedback and positive reinforcement, for instance, you know, those are pretty important parts of organizational performance and organizational improvement. And often I do think it's a bit overlooked. All right, Carol, good stuff. And thank you again for your time today. Before I let you go, I do have two more questions. I've got to ask, in your book, Picture This, Your Function, Your Company, you discuss, quote, how do you know for sure that there are no unintended conflicts in departmental objectives within your company, end quote. Can you elaborate on that and explain a little bit more what you mean by that to our listeners?
Yeah, I know that it probably sounds ridiculous or, you know, really unlikely, but it really is not unlikely to have conflicts in goals and objectives that are actually detrimental, you know, without knowing it. And I think the only way to really get you to go along with me on that idea is to give you a simple example. There is a company that was a client making and selling an industrial product with a long selling cycle and big ticket price tag through field sales reps who were, interestingly enough, on salary, not commission. And that selling process had as the last step before revenue begins is the customer service installs. So, however, when budgets and goals were finalized, the sales function established the following for sales reps: 20% increase in revenue on existing accounts and 25% growth in the number of new accounts for every sales rep. Customer service established the following for installation: cost controlled not to exceed 5% above last year. The new objectives, though they sound reasonable separately, make it impossible for both field sales and customer service installation to win at the same time. That is, how does the sales function get customer service installation to miss its cost control objectives in order to achieve their new revenue and account growth goals?
Mm.
So that's something that
interesting.
I have much more complex examples in some of my articles. For example, there are some examples. It seems like it's impossible, but it really is something that happens and happens frequently. And when I do an analysis and identify these things, which I always, always do in a very constructive way, because people haven't done this on purpose.
Yeah.
So the company got really big and you don't really look too far beyond your function in terms of setting goals and looking at performance and what you can do better and how you can achieve more. But if you don't take that first step with the context and if you don't go back and look at it periodically, you can run into snags like this in an unintended way.
Yeah, exactly. Great illustration, great example. I appreciate that. Well, Carol, what a fun conversation. Some great ideas here. My last question for you before I let you go today, if you're going to give advice to an organization, especially perhaps an organization preparing for a large-scale ERP organizational change, what would you say to them in terms of organizational performance and or training in general? What piece of advice would you leave them with?
I guess the most valuable advice I can offer is to consider using a tool and approach like an organization relationship map with key people in the organization that's preparing for implementation in order to develop a common picture of how the organization works that everyone owns and shows that everyone contributes value. Mm-hmm. We all have a line of sight from our job responsibilities to organization goals and objectives. It's so motivating and engaging for people. I can't explain. And it's so neat when you're part of helping people to get to that point.
Yeah, absolutely. Carol, thank you for your time. Fun conversation. I really do appreciate your dedication and passion to your trade. Can you tell our listeners how they can get in touch with you?
Yeah, I can be reached via my website, which is www.orgmap.com. Or you can reach me by telephone, a little spotty sometimes, but you can reach me via telephone at 973-455-0420. You can get to me through LinkedIn also.
Great. Well, thanks, Carol. And we'll be sure to include your contact information in the show notes, of course, as well. And I do have some articles that we didn't quite get to, but I'm going to share those in the show notes as well, because I think you had some really thought-provoking and interesting articles, too, that I want to be sure to share out. Thanks again. I appreciate it. Thank you for your time. Best of wishes. And we'll be in touch.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure to talk to you. I think we met the objective of having fun along the way. And, you know, I appreciate your time.
Agreed, Carol. This was fun and I appreciate it. Thank you again. And we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for joining us for today's episode of the ERP OCJ podcast. This podcast is intended as a forum to study, share, and discuss ERP organizational change successes and challenges. We discuss the people, process, and technological components of ERP organizational change by drawing on knowledge from extensive research, collaborative learning, and practitioner expertise and experience. We are incredibly grateful to have friends, colleagues, and mentors join us in our podcast as we seek to promote, connect, and foster relationships in the ERP organizational change community and contribute to its success by bringing research and practice closer together. We want to make sure this is the most useful and insightful ERP podcast you listen to, and we'd love your help in doing so by leaving us feedback and a review. A great place to do so is at Apple Podcasts. Just click on the Listen in Apple Podcasts link, then click Ratings and Reviews, and let us know your thoughts. You can get more info about the show, including show notes and episode highlights for this and all of our episodes, by visiting nesselandassociates.com and clicking the podcast option. Please join us again next week as we discuss the latest ERP organizational change research, practice, and stories. And don't forget to follow us on social media, hashtag the ERP OCJ. Thanks again for listening. Have a fantastic week.